And that's just $60 a year. So please pick up that phone. Call right now, 877-500-5266. And commit $5 a month to your community radio station. Stay informed, stay involved, and make sure that your voice is heard and that you're getting the full detail. Again, that number is 877-500-5266. $5 a month will get you The Battle for Justice in Palestine. We only have 2 copies, so you need to call now. 877-500-5266.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for volunteers today. Breakfast provided by Gravy, located in both Boise at 3957 North Mississippi Avenue and in Kearns at 3101 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. Serving traditional American breakfast and brunch, both locations are open daily from 7:30 to 3 p.m. Lunch provided by Nicholas, located in Portland's Industrial District at 318 Southeast Grand Avenue. Open daily from lunch to dinner, serving Mediterranean-style cuisine. Dinner provided by Nora Nickel, located in Portland's Central East Side at 1430 Southeast Water Avenue, serving ramen from 11 to 2 a.m. every day. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
You are listening
to Upstream.
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 A radio documentary series that invites you to unlearn everything you thought you knew about economics. I'm Della Duncan.
And I'm Robert Raymond.
Join us as we journey upstream
to the heart of our economic system
and discover cutting-edge stories
of game-changing solutions
based on connection,
resilience,
and prosperity for all.
I remember it was like Independence Day on a Sunday. It's like 10 o'clock at night. I'm still trying to finish up a project. I'm in San Francisco, and I just took a pause and went to go see the fireworks. And it was something about it being Independence Day, and I'm stuck working. And, you know, at that time, I was on salary, so it was like the more you work, the less you really get. In the corporate system, they love that. So they can extract as much energy and labor out of you as possible. And I felt that if I was going to work 24/7, 365 for something, it had to be something that I believed in, that I was passionate about. I knew that I would never be an owner of that business. You know, even as a branch manager or a night supervisor or a regional manager, which was what I was moving to, that say so over how much I made, how much my labor was worth, that amount of control over my life was not going to be there. That was my eye-opener. After that, I said, you know what? Something's got to change. And I started up an organization, Rich City Rides Bike Skate Shop, with the intention of creating a worker cooperative.
The Worker Cooperative. This is the subject of this 2-part series, and the voice you just heard was that of Najari Smith. After growing up in the Brooklyn Projects and serving some time as a young adult, Najari decided to come out west after the company he was working for offered to relocate him with a promotion. He married his girlfriend, and they moved to San Francisco. His corporate job paid pretty well and provided them with temporary housing in the city. He was doing well for the first 3 months, but then his housing stipend came to an end, and he quickly discovered he wasn't being paid close enough to cover the cost of living in San Francisco, where the average rent for a one-bedroom apartment is $3,500 per month. So he moved to Fruitvale, and then to West Oakland, and that's when things began to unravel. In the ensuing months, Najari quit his corporate job, separated from his wife, and eventually found himself living in Richmond, California, where, using his savings from his liquidated 401k retirement account, he founded a cooperative bike and skate shop called Rich City Rides. We asked him how he felt in his new work environment.
I like coming to work. That's a big difference. I like coming to work. Me and the other worker owners talk about how the business is doing, and we celebrate when we have a month that's better than the same month last year. Everything is transparent. We know exactly where all the money is going. We make all of our decisions collectively. It's not even a 180 from any corporate jobs or any other jobs that I've ever worked. It's a different world. It's the new economy I want to see.
Okay, hold up. Before we go any further, what exactly is a worker cooperative? Here's Sophie Graydon, who teaches politics at King's College London, with a brief cooperative 101.
A worker cooperative is a firm that is owned and managed by its own employees. Worker cooperatives can be found all over the world, with varying degrees of influence. They rose to prominence during the Industrial Revolution as part of the labour movement. Since their inception, there have been a set of principles at the heart of worker cooperatives called the Rochdale Principles, enshrining their common values of democracy, transparency, collectivity, and concern for the community into their work as a movement. In worker co-ops, employees are called members, and they vote in all strategic decisions, similar to shareholders in a corporation. But the difference with corporations is that in a worker co-op, one person gets only one vote, just like in a democracy. An interesting and important aspect of most worker co-ops is their pay ratio, the difference in pay between the highest and the lowest paid workers. In most cooperatives, the pay ratio is 1-to-1, meaning that everyone gets paid the exact same amount. Sometimes it's a bit higher than that, but not nearly as much as in traditional companies. A worker cooperative is also different from other kinds of cooperatives, like consumer co-ops, for example. Many grocery co-ops are actually consumer co-ops, not worker co-ops. This has been Sophie Graydon with an Upstream 101 on worker cooperatives.
Cooperatives take a direct swipe at capitalist greed.
Here's Najari Smith again.
Somebody at the top of the pyramid having a say over everybody else's livelihood. I remember my uncle, he once said, I told him, how much I was getting paid and, this new job that I got. And he's like, yo, they're paying you what they have to pay you. They're paying you as much as they can to keep you on board. I didn't really get that right away, you know? One thing that I feel cooperatives do is they give the value of an individual's labor back to that individual.
To learn more about the advantages of co-ops, here's Esteban Kelly, the executive director of the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives, a national grassroots membership organization that advances worker-owned, managed, and governed workplaces through education, advocacy, and development.
People form any kind of co-op, consumer co-ops, producer co-ops, purchasing, marketing co-ops, worker co-ops, to share risk. If you start a family-owned business and it goes under, that's your whole family. Your whole family's assets, savings, whatever, that's wiped out. For worker co-ops, sharing the risk among all of the workers there is just a less risky way of going about getting into business. And it also means that you can lean into the multiple owners if you need to tighten your belts, when you're faced with challenges. So we know this now through longitudinal economic data that worker co-ops are more stable and successful compared to traditional business models. They're also more efficient, it turns out. Prior to doing the research and having the data, we have this sort of cultural assumption that, well, you're involving more people, this must inherently be less efficient. But it turns out that the glut of management and middle managers and even people who are in hierarchical positions holding power or decision making where they don't necessarily have the full range of expertise over many things tends to be a little bit wasteful.
A democratic system works better.
This is Richard Wolff. He's been an economics professor all his adult life and currently teaches at the New School in New York City.
The results we'll have, the decisions that are made about what we produce, how we do it, where we do it, what's done with the profits, we will get better decisions if they're democratically arrived at than we get now. When we allow a small minority, not a democracy, but a small minority of people to own enterprises and to direct them, which is what capitalism is, then we really can't be surprised if they make decisions that service them, that serve them first, that put them first. And then all the rest of us who are not major shareholders, who are not members of board of directors, are living in an economy that's serving someone ahead of us, which we kind of all know, but we're afraid to see what that implies, which is if you want the economy to serve the people, you've got to put the people in charge. It's the first understanding that all democracy comes from.
Welcome back to KBOO's Fall Membership Drive. My name is Ray. I'm here with Pear, and we're listening to Radio Zine's broadcast of Upstream, a podcast that takes a deep dive into worker cooperative movements. And we're asking you to help us continue to bring you this kind of in-depth reporting by calling 877-500-5266. And contributing. We're suggesting a $10 a month contribution, which is $120 a year, and that will get you the KBOO Fight the Fascist Power Pack, which includes 40 hours of broadcast podcasts, a folder of open source software, including the Tor browser, which provides a way to browse anonymously, and Veracrypt, which lets you effortlessly encrypt entire folders. So take this opportunity, pick up that phone, give a call, and avail yourself of the KBOO Fight the Fascist Power Pack. Call 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm and click on Donate.
You know, we're learning something very interesting about co-ops here. You know, a lot of times the masters of the universe like to tell us that capitalism is free enterprise at work. No, it's not. Free enterprise means that anybody can start a business and sell goods and services. That could be you, that could be me, or that could be all of us as a co-op. Co-ops are free enterprise, and that's what this is all about. So give us a call. We're learning something very interesting about how people work and sustain themselves. 877-500-5266 or KBOO.FM. You know, KBOO needs to sustain itself too. We are a co-op. We are owned by you, the listeners. We are all in this together, sustaining each other, getting our voices out on the airwaves, which, by the way, belong to all of us. Let's use those airwaves. ABOO.FM or 877-500-5266. We have people waiting to listen, waiting to hear from you, and they will guide you through a very simple process, and you will become a KBOO member, part of our family.
And, Pear, we have a couple of folks to thank here, so I think I'll grab the small cowbell this time. We have Joe, who renewed from Portland. We have Tammy, who renewed from Portland. We have Sharon, who renewed from Portland. And interesting, we had Steve, who renewed, and he renewed in person, came in from Southeast Portland, renewed and upped his commitment, and walked in, said hi, did the sign up, and walked out with the new KBOO hoodie. And in fact, we can see the whole thing happen on the KBOO social media site. So how about that? Folks, this is a sign that we're open. We need your help. We're happy to entertain your visit or your phone call or take you online. But however we do it, we need your help to make sure that we continue to get this story out. One of the interesting things in this interview with Najari Smith was after leaving his $3,500 one-bedroom apartment in San Francisco and his high-priced corporate job where he couldn't even afford that, he opened a bike shop as a cooperative and said, I like coming to work. And one of the things I found here at KBOO is the volunteers like coming to volunteer. Mm-hmm. The community environment here is so encouraging that at the end of the day, when it's time to go home, sometimes you don't want to go. And for those of you who can't participate in person, who can't spend the time to come down here and be a volunteer or get involved at KBOO, the way you can help continue our voice is by becoming a member. Call 877-500-5266. Once more, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm and click on that donate button. But either way, become a member and join the community. As Per said earlier, once you become a member, you are actually an owner of your community radio station. We're not driven by corporations. We are driven by you, the listener. You set the direction of the station. Every member has an equal vote. Every member can participate in all of the committees, and every member can run for the board that helps send the direction for KBOO. So once more, 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. But either way, please get in touch now, make that commitment, and join the KBOO team.
Yes, I just want to say quickly, back in 1960, a friend of mine drove out to California from the East Coast, and we rented an apartment down in the Mission District. I think we each paid about $50 a month. Well, time to change. Prices have gone up, but the membership in KBOO, the cost of KBOO, for membership, it's pretty much the same. We don't, it's not inflated. It's a bare bones cost. You can contribute, whatever suits you, whatever suits your standard of living, your pocketbook, and do it now. 877-500-5266. Be a member, be an owner, be an airwave producer. Be not a Junior Murdoch. You can outdo Rupert Murdoch. You can be a voice for peace, for justice on KBOO, your radio station.
The last several years have seen an explosion of interest in worker cooperatives, so much so that the United Nations General Assembly designated 2012 as the International Year of Cooperatives. Since the latest collapse of capitalism in 2008, people have been eager for alternative models. The energy, anger, and desire for change that fueled movements like Occupy Wall Street have since been channeled into a number of different directions, including efforts to radically restructure the workplace. According to a 2017 report by the Democracy at Work Institute, over 60% of worker cooperatives in the United States formed after the year 2000, and over 30% after 2010. And the number has the potential to continue to rise as we begin to see what's called by some the silver tsunami, referring to hundreds of thousands of baby boomers who are expected to retire in the next 10 to 15 years. As they sell their businesses, around 300,000 per year, they're going to be participating in perhaps the largest transfer of wealth in U.S. history. Instead of selling off to the highest bidder or submitting to liquidation and closure, there's an opportunity for many of these businesses to be sold to their workers and converted into worker cooperatives.
The idea of worker co-ops is now an idea whose time has come. Marx is famous for a remark, ideas only become important in the world when they grab, the consciousness of masses of people. Co-op is right in the moment of doing that. It is becoming the idea. And it's partly becoming the idea, and this is perhaps the most important point, because the defenders of capitalism, particularly since the Second World War, have worked so hard to demonize every alternative that what they have done is convinced people that even if you don't like capitalism, it's all there is. It's what must be. It's the final step. So we then are given an unbelievable opportunity, which I use every chance I get. No, there's something you can do. Not only can you do it, it's being done. It's all around you. There's a moment when you reach a person when they have a little mini epiphany because they somehow thought there was no else. There was no other. There was no solution. And we are saying, here's one. Here's a whole nother way of organizing the enterprise that would make you much happier going to work every day than you are now. Make work a much more interesting development of your whole personality than the particular job you have now. Give you opportunities to shape your own life you do not have now. It would change you as a human being. Here's the revolution. Here's the new society, not as an abstraction, not as giving the government far away some power. No, right here. Your everyday life is going to transform, and you're going to be the master of your own fate.
Why does Richmond need a bike and skate shop?
Richmond needs a bike and skate shop because, well, for one, there's no other bike shops in like a 5-mile radius of Rich City Rides. We're the only bike shop in the city. Richmond needs Rich City Rides in particular because we show the folks here that it's possible to start a business. We're an example of what a cooperative business is. We show that it's possible for black and brown communities to create these things.
We're here at the Urban Till Farm in North Richmond. We're right across from where the Richmond Oil Refinery is, the Chevron Oil Refinery. And we are meeting Doria Robinson to talk to her about her work with the Cooperation Richmond movement.
Richmond is a city in the East Bay and San Francisco Bay Area on the eastern side of the Bay, directly across from one of the wealthiest areas, I think, not only in California, but I think in the nation, with Marin County.
Doria is a third-generation Richmond resident and the executive director of the Urban Tilth Farm, a community-based organization rooted in Richmond and dedicated to cultivating a more sustainable, healthy, and just food system.
Some of the neighborhoods here are the poorest in the state. Actually, the neighborhood that we're right outside of, North Richmond, has one of the lowest income levels, the highest poverty rate, the highest unemployment rate, highest rate of violence, highest rates of, you know, diabetes, heart disease, you name it. This community is really just burdened with it.
Richmond has been an industrial town from the start. In fact, the Chevron oil refinery was built there in 1902, 3 years before Richmond was even incorporated. During World War II, the city grew rapidly in population as workers came from all over the country to work in the shipyards that sprouted up around Richmond's deepwater port. Many of the residents of Richmond can trace their ancestry back to this point in time, when the population jumped from a sleepy 23,000 to well over 100,000, with a high proportion being African American, coming primarily from the rural areas of Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Mississippi. Today, Richmond's downtown has been largely abandoned, and its northern periphery is on the front lines of the Chevron Richmond Refinery, processing over 240,000 barrels of crude oil every single day and creating a toxic environment for those living in the surrounding vicinity. According to a 2009 report by Communities for a Better Environment, in Richmond, the childhood asthma rate is more than twice the national average. It's an example of what we call a sacrifice zone, a community that has been largely incapacitated by environmental damage and economic neglect. Because of the many challenges that Richmond faces, Doria, along with others, founded Cooperation Richmond, a cooperative incubator set out to help build community wealth for low-income communities and communities of color in Richmond. Here's Gopal Dianeni, a co-founder of Cooperation Richmond, who's been involved in movements for economic, environmental, and racial justice since the 1980s.
Cooperation Richmond is an organization that we have developed for the purpose of supporting worker-owned and community-owned cooperatives in Richmond, California, which is one of the poorest parts of the Bay Area, a majority people of color community. And we provide coaching, connections, and capital is kind of the way we talk about it. We're not a co-op academy. Instead, we're interested in accompanying cooperatives to success. And we're focused on folks who are most excluded from the dominant economy, who we think should be the foundation of building the next economy.
And why cooperatives as the vehicle for helping folks who are excluded into the next economy? Where did that idea of the cooperative as the vehicle come from?
Well, there's a few different pieces of that. So the first is bosses just suck. You don't need them. Everybody's labor is valuable. All wealth is generated through the work of the living world. Making money off the movement of money is just extraction of wealth from other people. So the idea of people, all of us being able to voluntarily co-participate and control our own labor to meet our needs and the needs of our communities, and to share that wealth, to create commons of wealth and commons of resources, is what we think is a necessary element of the transition that we need to be in. The dominant economy extracts wealth from the living world, and it begins with extracting wealth from our own work. And so in order to both confront that, but also to build a new kind of muscle memory and how to be in the world, to actually practice self-governance on a daily basis, we need institutions, infrastructure that can do that.
Founded in October 2017, Cooperation Richmond is plugged into a broader national movement that includes similar initiatives throughout the country.
There's Cooperation Richmond, there's Cooperation Jackson, there's Cooperation Texas, which came before either of the two of those. It's a really good example of what we call translocal organizing. There is autonomous place-based organizing with a unifying vision, shared strategies, and common frames. So we are all connected together, and so many other organizations who are supporting cooperative development are connected together because we share a common vision, because we're sharing strategies with each other, and because we're working together. And so in that way, we're all connected. And so we chose Cooperation Richmond because it sounds great, and it speaks to our larger relationship to a movement.
Cooperation Richmond played an important role in helping to get Rich City Rides off the ground.
Rich City Rides Bike and Skate Shop is this really powerful story. Before Rich City Rides, if you wanted to do any repairs to your bike, you had to go to Walmart, which is not exactly a bike repair place, or Target. That was it. And so people mostly just like threw their bike out if they got a flat, like literally threw their bike out. It's kind of painful to see. You know, oftentimes bikes are associated with gentrification and kind of an elitist thing you do on the weekends. In Richmond, it's really different. People can't afford cars, or their car is constantly breaking down. So they'll default to a bike just to get to work, or just to get to the store, or just to go get around. And so it actually is a need. You know, people actually needed to have a place to be able to fix their bike, which was much cheaper than trying to find another one.
All right, here I'm Pear, and I'm here with Ray, and we are asking for money to keep the station going. And
Pear, I love that you cut right to the chase.
Well,
that's great.
I have a consumer alert. I think in the last break I mentioned the Guinness, which has sustained me many and many times in the past. And it turns out an alert listener in Hood River informs us that the Guinness Brewery, which is one of the oldest in the world, I believe, has been bought out, and now they use GMO grain in their beer. That is astounding news. That is terrible news, you know. Gee whiz. Well, what can you say?
There's
you can
nothing say, modified here, though.
You can say you come to KBOO to learn things like this. This is news that you can use.
Absolutely.
Right. 877-500-5266. We are in the next to last day of our pledge drive, the penultimate day, as they say in the academic circles. 877-500-5266. You can help out this penultimate day by contributing your money, becoming a member, becoming a part owner of this wonderful radio station.
And Per, you left out the part very modestly where the person who called in that warning actually is a huge fan of yours and mentioned that he will be driving down from Hood River tomorrow to make his donation in person. So I think that speaks volumes for the kinds of folks that we have listening to KABU and the kind of folks that we have volunteering here at KABU.
Well, they used to say Guinness is good for you, but KABU is good for you.
I've been enjoying this show about the collective and worker cooperatives. You don't get this kind of detail and in-depth reporting just anywhere. You get it at KBOO. So please pick up that phone, call 877-500-5266. Or go online to kboo.fm and click on donate. But either way, take this opportunity to take advantage of our next to last day and show your support for your community radio station. You know, one of the comments that Jerry Smith just made is everybody's labor is equally valuable. And one of the things about being a member of KABU, no matter what level of membership you support, you are an owner. You're an equal owner. You're an equal member. You have an equal voice in driving the direction, and you can participate in any number of ways, including committees, on-air volunteering, and so on. It's your community radio station, but we need your help to continue to be your community radio station and continue to be your voice. Call 877-500-5266. Again, that number is 877-500-5266. And for just $25 a month, you can have this highly fashionable and very effective black KABU hoodie, complete with the famous KABU Red Star logo. 877-500-5266. Call us now.
You know, one of the voices on this segment might be familiar to KABU listeners, and that's Richard Wolf, the economist. He's on KABU quite frequently on one of the syndicated radio zine shows, and he's a kind of a rarity among economists. For one thing, he's intelligible. he makes his points very clearly, and he's very logical in his presentation, and he also has a point of view that is not very common among the capitalist priesthood of the economy class. And so here he is. He's on this show, which is very interesting about workers' co-ops. This might be the wave of the future. After capitalism has kind of crashed and burned, what's left is people and resources and their labor and how they get together and produce things for themselves, not for the owning class. So this is something on KABU, nowhere else. This is a food for thought. It's lunchtime. Have a big lunch of good thoughts here. And you, by listening to KABU, you keep learning. I've learned a whole lot in KABU in the last, I don't know how many years. And you can do this yourself. Be a member. Be an owner. 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm or 20 Southeast 8th. Come on down and see us. You know, have a cup of coffee, have a bagel, have whatever. Have a lot of good friendship and cheer, and you might walk out with a hoodie. Got to pay for it, of course, but make a fashion statement with your KABU hoodie.
You know, Per, you mentioned the end-stage capitalism, and the thing is, you know, we all feel that we're there, but nobody knows how long the end stage will be and what comes next. And when you listen to a show like Upstream where they're talking about the worker cooperatives and the fact that the pay ratio amongst all the employees is 1-to-1, and you know that everybody's labor is equally valuable, you appreciate that the future could be very bright, but we all have to work together as a community. And so as your community radio station, we're asking you to take this time, give a call, show your support. 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266. KABU has been in your ear, keeping you updated, keeping you informed, and keeping you entertained for 50 years. And we want to do it for 50 more, but we're going to need your help. I mentioned earlier, and I have lived in a couple of other places. I'm that old. I've lived in a couple other places, and it's amazing how many sizable cities don't have a community radio station, and how many more have had it and lost it because the community didn't continue to support it. So, community, we're asking for your support. We've been here 50 years. We want to be here 50 years more, and we can with your help. If you pick up that phone, give a call, 877-500-5266, or online as kboo.fm and click the donate button, or as Per said, in person. Come on in. We'll share your lunch. You'll get to meet. You'll get to meet the group of volunteers who commit so much to the support of this station. But whichever way you do it, take this opportunity. Give a call. Stop in. Donate online. But make sure you show your support for KBOO, your community radio station.
In the last 2 years, Rich City Rides has grown into a successful business on McDonald Avenue and is one of the only locally owned businesses on the block. Not only has the store created meaningful work for three men who were up against a capitalist economic system that would have preferred to extract value from their labor or profit from their incarceration, but Rich City Rides has also become an important part of the Richmond community, putting together social bike rides and running a bunch of different programs, such as the Earn a Bike program that encourages youths to work on projects collaboratively and gives prizes out to members who bring their parents along on special family bike tours. They also offer free bike clinics once a week, where locals can come in and learn how to repair their bikes using the shop's tools.
Worker co-ops used to be a strategy for people to opt out of the economy and do something alternative, and now it's a mechanism for people to opt in.
This is Esteban Kelly again.
Mostly low-income people, poor people, immigrants, people of color, formerly incarcerated people who have not had a strategy or an option to enter into a formal economy in a way that was not completely extractive or demeaning and demoralizing. And so worker co-ops have been adopted at the fastest rate from historically marginalized people in the U.S. as a way to enter into the economy.
The democratization of the workplace is something that can't be like underestimated in a work cooperative that's really run through democracy, through voting and through each owner having a say in, you know, the day-to-day decisions as well as the trajectory of the enterprise. That's really big, especially in communities like this where power has really been taken out of the hands of the people, and people are meant to just be arms and legs, extra appendages for the people in power. That transition of decision making, as well as the transition of profit making to the people, and the transition of accountability and responsibility, is truly transformative. If you take somebody who has just never been in that place where things matter so much, what they do and what they consider and the decisions that they make, their whole livelihood actually depends on them completely showing up, that's transformative. You can take that, practice that in your democratized workplace, but then once you kind of get a taste of it, it kind of spreads. You don't want to stop. As soon as people really get a taste of being in a position of power and being in a position to make decisions that impact yourself and other people who depend upon you, that impact your livelihood, that extends out to other things, right? It doesn't stay within that realm, especially because even just running a business, you realize that the city government impacts you and decisions that are made around the streets impact you and all these different things start to, you realize all the things that impact you and that you actually do have a voice and that you can stand up and you can advocate for things. That's really the goal.
The story of Rich City Rides is even more radical when you find out how few cooperatives there actually are in the United States. Remember earlier when we talked about how the number of worker co-ops in the U.S. is growing? Well, they are, but there's only actually a very small number of them. As of 2015, there were only 323 worker co-ops in the entire United States, and only 48 here in the Bay Area. Compare this to approximately 2,000 in France, 25,000 in Italy, and 100,000 in Venezuela. One of the biggest barriers faced by the cooperative movement in the U.S. is that people simply don't know they exist. Other challenges can be finding the initial capital to get started and navigating legal issues. This is why organizations that support cooperatives, like Cooperation Richmond, as well as others like the Federation of Worker Cooperatives, the Sustainable Economies Law Center, and the Working World, are so important. They provide the legal, financial, and technical assistance that traditional institutions don't. But ultimately, there's something else that lies beneath all of these challenges, a deeper issue that explains a lot about the state of cooperatives in the U.S.
One of the biggest challenges that's really on point right now is just the culture, right? The current culture that people are living in, their worldview, their frame of mind, defines success in a way that is not necessarily in alignment with cooperative values. So much influence around dominating the market or getting the most out of every sale, or, you know, not on the other values that you could bring, you know, to an exchange. The collective has really been destroyed in modern capitalist, industrial capitalist, post-industrial capitalist world.
So I'm Roxanne Villaluz, and I currently live in Richmond, California, born in the U.S. My parents were born in the Philippines, but my native language is actually Ilocano. It's not English. I currently work in a cooperative bakery and pizzeria, and I'm a professional cook and baker. One of the things that's kind of stark for me living in the U.S., but not kind of being raised as an American, I guess, was that I never worried about food or clothing or shelter, even though we had very little money when I was growing up. And I realized that that's not actually normal in the U.S., that folks are often struggling around those kinds of things. And so for me, I never struggled because our community was like, you're going to have these things. Like, no matter what happens to you, no matter how much money you have, you will never have to worry about where you're going to sleep, what you're going to eat, and what you're going to wear. And so this sort of idea of taking care of community and finding ways of working around systems and how do we care for each other was something that really drew me to a cooperative, because I felt really strongly that that was at least the principles and values of the cooperative. Is we take care of each other. There isn't a boss. There isn't someone that's above you. No one is better or worse than you. You're all the same. You're all equal. And you all have one, they always say, one voice, one vote. And that seemed very in line with the way I was raised.
Roxanne spent many years working in traditional institutions, but grew tired of their hierarchical nature and left them to work in a cooperative. She quickly noticed, though, that although there were many positive differences in her new work environment, there were still many aspects of traditional workplaces that seemed to seep into her daily interactions with coworkers. We asked her why she thought this was.
If folks don't have training and or resources and just conversations about capitalism and why a cooperative is different, then I could see how what you're brought up with would leak into your workplace, even if you're, you know, really excited about having equality and equity. But if you're grown up or told that, well, certain people have power and certain people don't, then when you get in a position where you're like, oh, I have some power, I think it becomes kind of part of how we function. Like, it's almost unintentional and accidental that you're like, I have this power and I'm wielding it in ways that I don't understand, but I'm going to do it because that's the model that I know. And so it's just very interesting to see how folks, we learn these lessons and then we don't know how to unlearn them, and we take them into places and spaces where all of us kind of have this desire to do something magical, but then we impose these boundaries on that magic.
For most of us, we don't come from a culture of solidarity, mutualism, cooperation, right? Like, most people's resumes and their work experience, or even for young people coming out of traditional hierarchical schooling, it's not about participatory, engaged, facilitative processes. So yeah, we have this structure. We have this business model where things can be all horizontal and democratic, but the workers themselves have to go through a lot of unlearning of traditional practices around scarcity, cynicism, and skepticism, and to build up the kinds of skills to run things in a way that's transparent and democratic.
Folks want to be in a cooperative, but I think you also have to know what the counter is to that. If you don't understand capitalism, then you don't understand when you start to adopt principles or when you start behaving like, you know, a franchise or something that's very driven by profits and customer satisfaction. I think in the Bay Area, we're like at the planting seed stage, and it can either die or it can either spread.
877-500-5266. It's going to be a little bit shorter break, so I thought I'd start right out with the important bit of information. Per, we'll have the phone number one more time, 877-500-5266. And if you're enjoying this discussion about worker cooperatives as much as I am and learning as much as I am by listening to it, this is a good opportunity for you to reaffirm your commitment to your community radio station, KBOO, and pick up that phone and give us a call and become a member. And it doesn't matter whether it's $5 a month, $10 a month, or $100 a month. No matter what, we need your help. We need your support. And by becoming a member, you become an owner of your community radio station, and you become a voting member of the community radio station, and you help set the direction. So become part of the community. Become part of your KBOO team and pick up the phone. Call 877-500-5266. Or go online to kboo.fm and click on the donate button.
You know, KBOO is probably the freest enterprise there is. It's easy to get into. All you got to do is be a member for, kind of a minimum of $5 a month or $20 a year. That's the lowest membership category. You can make it as high as you want, but it's a free enterprise. We stand for free thought, free enterprise. Freedom of imagination. That's what KBOO is. We don't depend on corporations to give us entertainment and information. We find out our information ourselves from people like us all around the world who have a network, sort of this informal network of information gatherers and sharers. And you will hear it all on KBOO, your radio station. So keep us going. We've been on going now for 50 years. By people just like you and me and everybody else, 877-500-5266. You can easily become a member, or you can go to kboo.fm and hit on the Donate Now button, or you can just come on down and visit us, share our lunch with us, have a cup of coffee, give us a little money, and like one person, you can walk out, wear a KBOO hoodie. Make it a fashion statement to the world that you are a proud KBOO member, supporter, and owner.
And Pear said, and I think rightly so said, it's a community of sharers. There's a volunteer community and a membership community that unites to make sure that KBOO's voice is heard throughout the Northwest Oregon, Southwest Washington area, and through our repeaters throughout the middle of the state. We reach out, we keep people informed, and we make sure that you have the information you need to be an active participant in your community. So please take this time, give us a call, 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266. The KBOO hoodie is, dare I say, dashing. It's a fashion statement. And not only that, it's functional. It'll keep you dry. It'll keep you warm as we head into the cooler and damper fall weather. And you'll be showing your friends, your neighbors, your family that you are committed to the support of your local community radio station. We're here for you, but we need you now to be here for us. Pick up that phone, call 877-500-5266. One more time, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm. Click donate.
To learn more about the interplay between cultural values and cooperatives, we spoke with Gorka Espiau, a researcher based in Bilbao, a city located in the Basque region of northern Spain, whose work explores innovation models and their relationship to cooperatively structured workplaces.
Yeah, it's fascinating that you're coming from the Bay Area, because actually I think there is at the moment a global discussion about what are the innovation models. And there is one leading innovation model that comes from the Bay Area that is based on the individual talent, and that in our experience is a myth, because there is no single company that is based on the individual talent. There is always a collective action around it. But what is interesting is that in the Bay Area, you have created a narrative about it that is conditioning the way that things are operating. So this is the story that people are telling about what innovation is and how innovation operates.
When Gorka talks about narratives, he's referring to what is called in critical theory the meta-narrative, an overarching account of a society's beliefs that gives people within that place meaning and legitimizes their experiences. It's like the ultimate story that underpins the values of any culture and is often held unconsciously. The Bay Area's meta-narrative drives our idea of how social innovation works. It explains why folks here treat Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and Steve Jobs like gods, fetishizing the individual and completely erasing the community that supported them, the public infrastructure that grounded them, and the collective wisdom that they built on. It explains how people can rationalize billionaire CEOs and minimum wages that nobody can actually live on. This mindset probably sounds familiar to anyone living in the Bay Area, California, and even maybe the entire United States.
In the Basque Country and in Mondragon, we have a totally different model that says, no, innovation is not about one individual. Innovation is about the collective capacity to do things differently. Instead of saying, I need to look for the talent, I need to look for the special person that is more intelligent than the others, and then to pay that person more, the Mondragon model is the alternative. It says, no, we all have talents. We have different talents. We just need to create a collective permission to operate in that way.
I do definitely think that there is a mind frame in the Bay Area that folks have certain skills, and if you don't have even the basic skill, then you can't even attempt to do something. So I definitely have heard that, like when I was doing professional cooking in another place, there was definitely this idea that, well, certain people are just better at it. So even if they have no training or whatever, they're just better than you, or this person's better. And so then they got like special privileges for being a certain kind of way. And I think that that mentality is in complete contrast and conflict with cooperativism, because cooperativism says anyone should be able to do something with training. And it might take longer for somebody than someone else. And then again, it's tied into capitalism where time is money, right? And so I've actually heard people say this, well, I don't know if I want to bring that person on because we're going to have to spend way more money on them training them. And so it's this notion of attaching value to things. And so if you have to pay more for something, then maybe it's not worth spending that money or time on a person because, you know, we want to save, or we want to make sure that we're being efficient. That gets tossed around a lot. Efficiency, you know, making sure that we're doing things as effectively as possible. So I definitely see that quite often around this sort of like theoretically what a cooperative brings, but then how that bumps up against what folks know or are comfortable with.
The focus on efficiency and profit maximization are integral to the capitalist mindset and form part of the meta-narrative in the Bay Area that contributes significantly to the structural inequality that makes it one of the most unequal societies in the world. And because the stories that we tell ourselves go largely unexamined, they not only shape our behaviors and institutions, but also limit our views of reality and lead us to believe that there is no alternative. Worker cooperatives are guided by a set of values that cut against the grain of the dominant culture. And unless co-ops are actively insulated, the values of competition, self-interest, and profit maximization can easily seep in. At the same time, these dominant values make it difficult for cooperatives to grow and extend out into wider spheres of influence. But perhaps if we are able to intervene at the level of the meta-narrative and elevate alternative stories, then maybe the vision that the cooperatives movement holds really can become a reality.
how does a small bike shop, you know, even just taking the example of the bike shop, compete against, you know, chain bike shops that may want to come in and they realize, oh, they developed the market, you know, let's come in and swoop it up. They have economies of scale. They have other things that would make it really challenging for this kind of homegrown enterprise to succeed. I think that at this point, the only defense that we could really have against that is that culture piece. You know, like, what do you want more of in the world? You know, more of these kind of chain stores who don't really care about you when you come in. They make you feel terrible about your bike, or, you know, they don't really care about you or your business. Or do you want somebody who's truly invested in giving back to this community? You know, I don't think we're ever going to solve this by having a race to the bottom and winning a race to the bottom, winning a race to the cheapest thing, to the best price point. We're never going to win that race. We have to change minds and change minds when it comes to what is the value of work? What is the value of resources? What is the value of the objects that we bring in and out of our life, whether it be food or bikes or energy? And what is the value in the way that those things are created, whether they're created sustainable or whether they were created in an extractive way? Like, we need to be working deeply on that story changing, culture changing, worldview changing arena. Because I don't see, from where I stand today, any way to win the race to the bottom, to win the price point race. There's no winning in that. Nobody wins. But we just need to be in a different arena and say it's actually not about that at all. It's about this. And hopefully, you know, our arena tastes better. It's more fun to go to. People are nicer, you know, and it's actually worth, the value is worth the cost.
Join us for episode 2 of this series, where we'll go deeper into the Basque mountains and forests up to the industrial town of Mondragon in northern Spain to learn what more can be done to help strengthen this burgeoning global cooperative movement as it struggles to find a foothold within the vast, treacherous sea of capitalism. Thank you to Jerry Folk, Antoine, and the Roots of Orcus for the music in this episode, and thank you to Phil Rigglesworth for the cover art. Upstream is a labor of love. We distribute all of our content for free and couldn't keep things going without the support of our listeners and fans. Please visit upstreampodcast.org/support to donate. And because we're fiscally sponsored by the nonprofit organization Independent Arts and Media, any donations you make are tax exempt. You can listen to any of our past documentaries at upstreampodcast.org, and you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Upstream Podcast. Support for this episode was provided by the New Economy Coalition, a network of organizations imagining and building a future where people, communities, and ecosystems thrive. To find out more and to get information about their upcoming Common Bound conference held this June in St. Louis, please visit neweconomy.net.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Portland Underground Graduate School, a local independent learning community offering courses and workshops for continuing lifelong learning, scholarships, and other tuition opportunities available. Course options and more information online at pugspdx.com.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If your vehicle has a clean title, we can take it as a donation. If your vehicle isn't working, we can work with that too. Call 877-KBOO-123. That's 877-526-6123. Or go to our website, kboo.fm/vehicle.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for volunteers today. Breakfast provided by Gravy, located in both Boise at 3957 North Mississippi Avenue and in Kearns at 3101 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. Serving traditional American breakfast and brunch, both locations are open daily from 7:30 to 3 p.m. Lunch provided by Nicholas, located in Portland's Industrial District at 318 Southeast Grand Avenue. Open daily from lunch to dinner, serving Mediterranean-style cuisine. Dinner provided by Nora Nickel, located in Portland's Central East Side at 1430 Southeast Water Avenue, serving ramen from 11 to 2 a.m. every day. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266. Right now.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2018-19 concert season. Molly O'Brien and Rich Moore will take the stage in the season opener on Friday, September 21st. For over 30 years, singer Molly O'Brien and guitarist Rich Moore have made it their mission to unlock the secrets of the canon of American roots music. They are geniuses at interpreting the essence of the songs they tackle. Experience them live at the Portland Folk Music Society season opener on Friday, September 21st at Reedwood Friends Church, located at 2901 Southeast Steele Street in Portland. The concert begins at 7:30 with doors opening at 7. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On his Martin guitar, the poor folk thinks he's gonna be a star.
Hi, I'm B.B. King. You know the guy that plays that guitar called Lucille. And when I'm in Portland, I get my blues from KBOO. That's 90.7 FM on your radio. Please stay tuned. They might play one of my records.
That's right. We might. You just never know. You're listening to KBOO in Portland, 90.7 FM, listener-sponsored community radio. I'm Lori Sonnenfeld, and I'm so happy to be here with you today. And...